This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show, episode number 881, 881. This is your host, Jason Hartman. Thank you so much for joining me today. And we have got part two of Doug Casey. I think part two was even more interesting than part one. That is coming up here in a few minutes. Quote for the day, though, comes from, well, a president that changed the country in a not so good way, if you ask me. But, you know, he had some things to say. And the quote is, I like what he said about real estate, though. No matter what. He said, real estate cannot be lost or stolen, nor can it be carried away. Purchased with common sense, paid for in full. Now that's wrong. But at the time he said that, that idea was not so bad. I'll explain in a moment. And managed with reasonable care, it's about the safest investment in the world. Franklin D. Roosevelt said that. And I've got my friend here, Ed Babkus, with me, talking a little bit about insurance in light of all the stuff that's been going on with these treacherous storms and hurricanes. We're going to talk about that. Ed, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing real well. How are you doing today, Jason?
Good, good. So when Franklin Roosevelt said that quote, and it's a good quote, paid for in full, I think that was decent advice. I'm not saying it was great advice. I'm saying it was decent advice at the time. And the reason I say that is that in 1971, as we all know what happened, we went off the gold standard when Nixon finally closed the gold window, and that allowed the government to just inflate forever, indefinitely. Then the rules of the game changed. You know, our parents and our grandparents always, you know, sort of had this mentality, this Depression era mentality that said, pay things off, don't have any debt, debt is bad. But I say debt is my favorite four-letter word, as long as it's investment-grade debt, meaning not consumer debt, of course, but debt tied to an investment, especially the real estate investment, because, you know, you win two ways. Inflation comes along and debases the debt or devalues the debt as the dollar becomes worth less or the euro becomes worth less or the yen or whatever currency you're dealing in, doesn't matter. And then the real estate itself is composed of commodities, which have intrinsic value that aren't tied to any one currency. And so commodities have always been a good hedge against inflation, and especially lately, commodities are doing well. Well, not all of them, of course, it's a mixed bag, but the real estate-oriented commodities. And then the debt goes down. So I call it the double inflation arbitrage, where you actually win both ways. And we haven't even talked about cash flow or anything else yet. Those are just two components of the multidimensional equation. But, you know, I agree with what he said. Now, some might take issue with that quote today because they look at the floods in Houston and we've got another hurricane bearing down now. We'll see what happens there with Key West and some parts of Florida. Hopefully it won't be too significant. And by the way, we're recording this episode in advance, so by the time people hear it, you know, of course, that will have been known. But Ed, there's some confusion in the insurance world, and you're an insurance guy. You've been doing this like, I don't know, 30 years or something. What is, just explain for our listeners the difference between insurance coverage when it comes to flooding versus rain or especially wind-driven rain, and what this means. And then I want to also ask you about how opinions of whether flood insurance is required, number one, because required is one issue, that varies from lender to lender, depending on how they interpret the flood maps. These things are not black and white, are they? And then secondarily, some people might choose to get flood insurance even though it's not required. So let's kind of speak to a few of those issues if we could. You can take it wherever you want.
Oh, I think it's great topic matter with what just occurred, of course, with Harvey and what, as you say, is pending at the moment, but we'll know a lot more information by the time of the recording. But, you know, the easiest way to sum up wind and rain versus flood is the problem coming from above or is the problem coming from ground level or below? So with a flood like Harvey and the streets are flooded and people are traveling around in boats, the water is rising. So the water is coming from the ground or below the ground on up. So that's flood insurance. We have water that's going above staircases into homes. And that flood or water damage that's created by the flooding is a surge of water or all the water that is coming down from the sky. Whereas wind-driven rain, if your house is not flooded, but you have water coming from your roof because of a hole in the roof or some sort of crack or deterioration of the roof material or just the severity of a windstorm finding every crack it possibly can in a home, no matter how well constructed or how new the roof is, and water is somehow coming through the side of the house or the roof of the house, that would be wind-driven rain and water damage, and that would be covered under a traditional homeowner's policy or landlord or investor policy for the real estate investment. So the side or the upper portion of the home, water damage, file the claim. Wind driven into the home, file the claim. If it's from the ground coming up, that's going to be flood insurance. And for that, you're going to need a policy usually written through the National Flood Insurance Program, which unfortunately is our government. And our government is trying to figure out what to do with the ceiling debt right now and what to do with Harvey and how much they want to expand upon it. And that has all sorts of ramifications for the investor.
Okay, so what are those ramifications?
Well, a big negative one, unfortunately, is because the government has played the role of insurance company with flood insurance and for many, 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 many years undercharged, if you will, just to identify the component of the risk, the government would constantly borrow, which means going to the taxpayer for more money, so that the National Flood Insurance Program can be solvent. And most recently, and when I do say most recently, I'm talking about 18 months ago, what they did is they started increasing rates. And for investors buying properties in flood zone areas, what they saw was a surcharge of 25 to 30% per year on their flood insurance premiums. And the homeowner, her rates were going up less gradually because they own the home, but they really took it to the investor community.
Okay, so in other words, they didn't charge as high a rate for homeowners. When we say that, we should call it what it is, owner occupants versus investors, right?
Yes.
And so there was a premium for investor-owned properties, which, you know, I think that's reasonable as long as the premium is reasonable. The idea being that sometimes the investors aren't, you know, well, they're certainly not there. And if that property is like vacant between tenants, you know, there is a little bit higher risk component, I would think. Anyway, you know, that can be debated all day long. Yeah.
Well, this really wasn't a risk-based increase. This was simply a political way to get more money into FEMA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Federal Emergency Management, and to simply try to get the NFIP a little more solvent and politically, you
say,
can't go to a
don't use acronyms. What's the NFIP?
I'm sorry, the National Flood Insurance Program,
right.
and FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency.
Well, that one most people know FEMA, but yeah, go ahead. Okay.
So unfortunately, again, if an owner-occupied property is 25% increase in 1 year, the investor-owned property would be 40%. They were taking large bites on the investor-owned rental properties to really try to get more money into FEMA.
So, Ed, I was just asking about private markets versus the government doing, you know, being involved at some level in the insurance, I guess I should say, because it's always complicated. But maybe you can quickly speak to that. And then I want to ask you about flood certificates, the map issue. I guess you say it's more consistent than it appears to be. And then elevation certificates that might get someone a break or make them buy a smarter property. So go ahead, and private market question.
Absolutely. Lloyd's of London, the big insurer, has definitely gotten involved in the sale of flood insurance in the private market. And there are agents, including our office, that does offer. Obviously, this is all yet to be seen now after Hurricane Harvey, and perhaps we'll see what happens with Irma. But there are private markets available that can potentially lower the premiums, maybe not significantly, but some sort of discount.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so why is there – well, maybe there's not, but my impression is, or at least years ago, it was weird. A client would buy a property – and sometimes the lender would say, you got to have flood insurance. And then another client would buy the property, you know, just a couple doors down on a level street and say, you don't need flood insurance. I mean, is there some like interpretation that goes on with these flood maps and flood certifications or not?
Theoretically, there's very little interpretation. The problem is that the government, in their quest to raise money, and I'm not being cynical, is revising the flood maps all the time.
You can be cynical when it comes to that government. Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, I am being a little cynical, but a lot of truth, unfortunately, is there's map revisions. Perhaps people have heard of letter of map revision, letter of map amendment. The government is constantly remapping with the quest of getting more properties into flood zones. So determining on the timing of when the latest map revision is could have an impact on why you have to have flood insurance or you don't have to have flood insurance, and 2 years later your neighbor does have to have flood insurance.
You know, Ed, this is almost like gerrymandering, you know, with the Democrats and Republicans fighting over how they're going to draw the district so they can influence the way people vote. And, you know, we're going to draw it. Here's a city block and we're going to draw it. We're going to skip these two houses because we know they're not in our political party or whatever. You know, God, it's crazy.
It's a great analogy. It's a great analogy.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Okay, so then we come to the issue of elevation certificates. Now, the elevation certificate may get someone out of having to pay for flood insurance because one property may be slightly more elevated than another, or maybe it would influence their decision on which property to buy. Tell us about elevation certs.
Elevation certs are a way when a property is not necessarily in the city, a little bit more rural setting where a house is built higher up on the lot. So if you have a lot that maybe is an acre and the house is sitting towards the peak of that lot versus towards the bottom of the lot, an elevation certificate can certainly help out by avoiding the cost of flood insurance altogether. Many times a flood elevation certificate will eliminate the need in its entirety for flood insurance.
Ed, you know, in looking at the estimates for just what's happened so far with mostly Houston and the tragic losses there of course, life and then property as well, I mean, they're all over the board, but this is getting into, we're talking, you know, one-fifth of $1 trillion potentially is some of the estimates I've seen. How is the government and insurance companies going to pay for this? I mean, how much of it falls on private versus public markets? And wow, I mean, this is just it's staggering, the losses here.
It is staggering, and that's a great word. Unfortunately, the taxpayer is gonna be the brunt of it, just to identify from my perspective, because we have the National Flood Insurance Program, which is insolvent for all intents and purposes. They've been raising rates forever, and that doesn't seem to get it done. And you don't have everybody that was in a flood zone who got flooded. So you have a lot of people who didn't even think to buy flood insurance, and their properties are now, for all intents and purposes, worthless and need to be totally rebuilt. As a consequence, the government aid is going to be the bailout when it really comes down to it.
Yeah, wow, this is, it's just amazing the way, what the tragedy here, the losses are staggering. Rebuilding is going to take a long, long time, and I hope they rebuild better, because I really want to put some of the blame for this onto government and the lack of good planning and, you know, water management and so forth. It's just shocking that this could even happen. You know, it's same with Katrina in New Orleans, of course, too.
Right.
Shocking that it could happen.
A lot of moving pieces. One is allowing builders to build below sea level. And that's a problem in of itself. The cities want the tax revenue and the property tax revenue. And how often do these things occur? They're already saying this is a once in a thousand year occurrence. We can go into all the debates about climate change and say, is this going to be more the norm? Is it not going to be more the norm if we don't see a flood like this for another 20 years? And it certainly isn't the norm. So once in a 1,000-year occurrence, do you stop building in areas that are below sea level? It's a debate unto itself. I don't know if you're going to be able to control that type of activity.
Yeah, well, you know, this is what we have when we have incentives that are all aligned or misaligned. And you know, I was talking about this in 2003, 2004 with the coming mortgage crisis. I knew that was coming. It was obvious. Nobody was paid to put the brakes on that. And that's the subprime problem that we had. It you know, was a huge contributor to the Great Recession. But it wasn't
Absolutely.
The whole thing, of course. There's a lot of Wall Street stuff behind that. But everybody was getting paid all along the way, from the, you know, the incentivizing the homeowner to the loan rep to the bankers to the Wall Street folks. You know, just everybody was making money all along the way. Why would anyone stop it? Right? You know, no one was going to say, hey, there's going to be a problem here, right? So that's, you know, that's exactly the scenario you just described. You know, the cities want the revenue, the developers want to build, you know, and everybody will kick the can down the road and pay for it later, you know?
We'll kick the can down the road. I don't think anything epitomizes it more than that statement.
You know, that's all too common in American life, but probably true around the world anyway as well. Okay, Ed, hey, thank you for sharing some of this stuff. Anybody can get a hold of you by talking to our investment counselors. We all know you've spoken at a couple of our Meet the Masters events over the years, and it's always great to have you on the show and pick your brain about insurance stuff. Before we get to our guest, I've got a couple of housekeeping items I want to take care of. Number one, we are going to have a new contest. Let's give away another Amazon Echo, and that'll be at jasonhartman.com/contest, jasonhartman.com/contest. Of course, we've got our Venture Alliance event coming up in beautiful Palm Springs, California in October, VentureAllianceMastermind.com or JasonHartman.com in the events section, either place. Of course, while you're there in the events section, tickets are selling like hotcakes for our Meet the Masters event that isn't till January of 2018. But this event's going to sell out far in advance. I have a feeling it will, because we've never had ticket sales go so briskly. But of course, we've got some good early bird prices for you. Maybe that's part of it. Register for that at jasonhartman.com in the events section as well. Get your early bird pricing for Meet the Masters. It's going to be a phenomenal event. We've expanded it. It's going to be 3 days this time, not 2 days as normal. And I think this is our 20th Meet the Masters event. We used to do it twice a year. Now we only do it once a year. It's a lot of work to put this event on. It's in beautiful La Jolla, California in January. And it's just at a gorgeous property. We've never done an event before at this property, but it's just a phenomenal property. You'll get the discount hotel booking information and all of that stuff after you register. And then, oh gosh, what else did I want to tell you? Yes, short-term rentals. Thank you to all of you who went to jasonhartman.com/STR. jasonhartman.com/STR. You can still go if you haven't yet. And that stands for short-term rental, STR. And we are putting together this council of short-term rental property investors who are experienced in the art and science of short-term rentals. And we'd love for you to apply. So just go to jasonhartman.com/STR. And we'd love to hear about your experiences and learn from you and have help impart your wisdom to our other clients and listeners. So that's jasonhartman.com/STR. And let's get to part two of Doug Casey live in Aspen, Colorado, when I was there last week. And here it is. Okay, so if that second scenario happens that you just described, that means there is inflation, right? So you can have a deflationary depression, you can have an inflationary recession or depression. That's just a matter of degree. Or you can have a, like the 70s, the stagnationary, right? I mean, that's kind of the misery index that, you know, Carter really was the guy behind that one.
But well, that's what they have in Zimbabwe and Venezuela right now.
So the definition of depression in this kind of anecdotal sense that we're talking about it, if you will, is really just a decline in standard of living, right? I mean, we can talk about all kinds of economics things and stuff, but that's really what it is at the end of the day, right?
That's right.
So you think there will be a decline in the standard of living, and I agree with you on every point that you mentioned except one, and that's the wild card known as technology. Technology is standard of living improving, and it is deflationary. Okay, so things in so many ways, because of the marvels of technology we're producing, it's just incredible, seem to be getting better. But the interesting thing about it, Doug, is when you look at like the kind of the hard assets, let's look at a typical person or family, right? In the 70s, that person could buy a home, or in the 50s, post-World War II baby boomers, right? Could buy a home in, you know, Lakewood, California. Okay, I used to live in Long Beach. And it was on a quarter acre of land, and admittedly, the home was only 1,000 square feet. It wasn't very big. But it had a lot of land. Now everybody's crammed in like rats in high-density living, right? And so, but, you know, our houses and our lives are full of these gadgets nowadays that make things a lot more convenient. We certainly can travel easily. You know, travel is cheaper since Reagan deregulated the airlines and so forth. So there's all this, like, good stuff and bad stuff at the same time. It's hard to tell. It's confusing, isn't it? But certainly, people don't own these big, beautiful homes anymore like they used to. I mean, you could buy a home in the early 70s in Newport Beach in a beautiful place called Harborview Homes for $40,000, and you were on a quarter-acre lot, and you had a 2,000-square-foot home in a beautiful neighborhood, just a gorgeous neighborhood that today will cost you millions of dollars. So it's a little confusing, isn't it, for most people?
Well, you're absolutely correct. And you brought up a couple of very interesting points. In the first place, you're quite correct that technology is greatly increasing people's standards of living. And hopefully that trend's going to continue, because there are more scientists and engineers alive today that have lived in all of Earth's previous history put together. And they're making wonderful innovations, and there are various areas, not just computers, but genetics and biotech and
environment. And this is why the environmental alarmist should not be upset about population growth. These people are resources. They're not just a cost on the environment. They are resources. They solve problems.
That's true, although the fact is that the world population is peaking. The only place in the world where the population is growing significantly is Africa. In the developed world, the population is dropping, actually. Japan is a harbinger for what's happening in the rest of the world, with the exception of Africa. Different story. But yes, I'm very optimistic for the future because of all the scientists and engineers that are alive today. But if you have a financial catastrophe, that can set you back economically and then sociologically, and then it can lead to all kinds of consequences, perhaps militarily.
So, Doug, we're talking about how there are so many scientists and engineers alive today, more than ever in history, and how they're
it just creating incredible life-enhancing technologies. So as I always say, it's an amazing time to be alive. But the central banking cartel and the governments of the world will try and screw that up as best they can. They always do. And, you know, it's just a question of which force will be more powerful ultimately. Will technology win, creating a future that's more affordable and a higher standard of living? Or will bad government and monetary and fiscal policy create a future that, you know, where currencies plummet and inflation is rampant and the standard of living declines? I don't know who's going to win that game, but what other thoughts do you have?
Well, I see government as being a problem in and of itself. In other words, it's not a question of who's in the government. It's the entity itself. Why? Because there's no voluntarism about government. It's based on coercion. You do what you're told or you go to jail. So it's unique in society in that regard. And it's not a good thing. A civilized society is based on voluntarism and cooperation, not coercion. And unfortunately, all over the world today, without exception, governments all over the world are far more powerful than they've ever been in the past. And I might point out that almost every government in the world is seriously bankrupt. And that's very dangerous because their first rule of existence is to survive. And if a government is going to survive, it's going to take whatever it needs from its subjects. I think taxes are going to tend to go up and inflation is going to go up because inflation is really money printing. It's a great way for governments to generate money for themselves by just printing the stuff up. Of course, it devalues the dollars that you have and save, but this is a point that I know you're going to make. This is a good reason to own real estate because, especially with debt against it, because your debt is owed to a bank is going to be inflated out of existence while your property itself will edge up gradually. And it has utility value. So as a market speculator, which I am, I'm not sure if I'm very interested in real estate from that point of view right now. But from the long-term point of view, which I know interests you, yes, I'm very interested in it. And I own a lot of real estate, although mostly international.
Yeah, good stuff. I call that the double inflation arbitrage, because what happens is the debt is debased by inflation. And since real estate is just, it's a commodity in and of itself, of course, the land is, but the structure is built of a whole basket of commodities, copper wire, petroleum products, lumber, concrete, glass, steel, labor, of course. And those things are indexed to not any one currency. They're globally traded. They have intrinsic value. They don't depend on any currency or government fiat or anything like that. They have intrinsic value to every human being on Earth because, you know, as the old saying goes, there's three things everybody needs: food, clothing, and shelter. And so I say, let them rent that shelter from you. You know, that's what I like about real estate. So, Doug, oh gosh, there was something else I was going to say. Oh, the interesting thing when you talk about government and volunteerism, I love that point. The way you put that is so succinct. Because my friends on the left will always talk about how we need a new law, a new regulation. You know, the reason the Great Recession happened is because the markets weren't regulated enough. We need Barney Frank, and you know, who has absolutely no experience in financial anything except what he got in government, of course, to come in and regulate more, right? And the interesting thing about it is, number one, every law and every regulation ultimately devolves into one concept. If you disobey it, first you'll get a letter in the mail, then you'll have police show up with guns at your door, and then after that you'll be imprisoned and your freedom will be taken away. That's the net result of any law, okay? That's exactly the way it goes. Or maybe the letter will include a fine. So first you'll be asked for a fine, and then it'll be the people with guns at your door, and then, you know, haul you off to prison. And so that's certainly not volunteerism, and the government has that monopoly on violence, as we talked about earlier, and as Ayn Rand so succinctly wrote about. But there's all these unintended consequences of this additional regulation. And so many people, they only kind of see the first layer of that. They never peel the onion back enough to see how it goes deeper. You know, can you speak to that for a minute?
Well, it's a matter of psychology, actually. look, I'm a social person. I enjoy the company of other people. But the problem is when you get a few people together, it usually degenerates down to the lowest common denominator. And kind of the animal instincts or the animal spirits of people come out. And I prefer to solve things rationally and logically as opposed to using force. And I can't emphasize enough that the essence of government is force. So I'd like to see it limited in our lives. This is it. Well, people are going to say, well, you're a Republican. I say, no, I'm not a Republican. The Republicans are actually more dangerous than the Democrats at this point, which is pretty hard to believe.
And they're pretty much like them. They've both come to the same, they're both in the same party. They're just a flip side of the coin.
Yes, it's a question of the welfare state or the warfare state. And even there, the two parties will reverse positions with each other. So, look, I've been a libertarian for all of my life, and I've actually gone beyond that at this point, where I don't believe that government serves a useful purpose. So I'm actually an anarchist libertarian. And I believe that as technology and society evolves more, that government is going to be left behind and be a disgraceful artifact of the past.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. You know, I've read a lot about how government can really become, I mean, obviously so much more efficient through technology. You know,
we don't want to make the government more efficient. You want to make it more like Nazi Germany? They were very efficient.
That's not what I mean. I mean, efficiency creating smaller government with less power. But I'd like you to address the concept we talked about at lunch, the files concept, for a moment. You know, it used to be all about the land, so it sort of made sense that governments would be created out of geography, right? But nowadays, it's more about sharing ideas and ideologies and philosophies of how people should live and how communities should live. So, when you say government could be left behind as an artifact, I think that's really moving in that direction, isn't it? What is the files concept?
Well, there's an excellent science fiction author, still alive, Neal Stephenson, who's written a number of really good books. My favorite is called Diamond Age, where he explains how in the near future, say 50 years from now, that governments will largely have just blown up, dried up and blown away, and people will organize themselves in files. In other words, I don't really see anymore my countrymen as being people that I share government ID with, or people that live in my geographic area, which is simply accidental. My real countrymen are people that I share values and interests with, and they can be anywhere in the world, any race or anything, anywhere. And the world is going to, with the internet and the jet plane and so forth, you can find that your real countrymen, people that you have something genuinely in common with, can be anywhere in the world. And they're going to act as, let's say, mutual beneficial societies that will ensure each other, that will protect each other. And that's the way the world is evolving, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's going to take a long time to play out because the folks in government control around the world, they will not relinquish that power freely, will they?
Well, the amazing thing is that people voluntarily and very stupidly give up their sovereignty to the government, which is just a fiction. The state is just a fiction. People are relying upon it. They're so corrupted by the so-called free benefits that they get from it that they think it's a cornucopia. They think it's something for nothing. But this is one of the good things about the coming depression, which I think we're entering upon right now, incidentally, is that these governments are all going to go bankrupt. They're desperately going to try to keep themselves in existence by inflating the currency more, taxing more, regulating more to keep things together. But as this goes away, I think that people will have to become more self-reliant in a high-tech world. And that's where I think this concept of files comes into play.
Very interesting. You know what I meant to mention a few minutes ago when you were talking about taxes and inflation, and you just mentioned it again. It's interesting, and there was a very scholarly article on this decades ago. I can't remember who it's by or anything. I'm sure you're familiar with it. But, you know, when government controls the monetary supply or a pseudo-governmental entity like the Federal Reserve or any central bank, why would it ever need to tax? Because it can tax through inflation. You don't need to have both. And it's interesting that the Federal Reserve and the IRS came about in the same year, I believe. Yeah. I mean, that's just shocking. That's no mere coincidence by any means. But why should you have a double tax? Inflation is a tax. So either you have sound money that can't be inflated away, and you have taxes, or you have no taxes and you just tax through inflation. Either way, that would be fair. There'd just be one tax. But now we have at least two. I'm sure we have more. Obviously, we have many kinds of taxes, obviously. But what are your thoughts on that?
Inflation is a much more destructive and deadlier tax than even the income tax.
And it's much more sneaky, too.
Yes, it is. It's much worse because I don't know if we have time to go into this, probably not, but it creates inflation and the destruction of the currency by creating, because what happens when they inflate the currency is that it's not like they deposit $1,000 in everybody's bank account on a Sunday night. And idiotically, there was a politician named George McGovern back in the 60s that actually advocated that. Give $1,000 to everybody on a Sunday night. It doesn't create any more wealth, but it does create distortions and it reduces the value of the remaining number of dollars. The problem is when the government inflates, and this is why the rich have been getting richer at an accelerating rate in recent years, it's that some people get the money before other people get it. They get to spend it before other people, and the rich people are the ones that get to borrow more to take advantage of inflation, and they can hire the tax attorneys and the accountants.
And play the games.
And play the games, which the middle-class guy can't. And this is why the middle class is diminishing in the U.S. It's because of inflation, and worse than that. Inflation, in addition to those things, creates the business cycle. Can't go into that now, but it's an artificial cycle of boom and then bust. And that also plays into the hands of the rich people. So we were developing an atmosphere of class warfare in the U.S., and I hope it doesn't turn into something resembling a civil war. I don't think it'll be a civil war because the average American is too fat, too lazy, and too drugged out on Prozac and Ritalin and so forth. So
and Adderall.
Yeah, and anyway, nobody uses guns anymore. So it'll be a different kind of civil war. I don't know. It'll be interesting to spectate. I'll be watching this from my estancia in Argentina.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, Doug, let's wrap it up. This has been fascinating. But, you know, the takeaway is that you believe this next crash or collapse, if you will be an inflationary crash, right? Because there's multiple flavors of that. And I like income producing real estate for that, you know, bare necessities housing. That's the, you know, basic stuff, not the expensive stuff. I definitely agree with you about the diminishing middle class, and that scares me greatly. I love the middle class because the middle class equals stability. I like a big middle class in a country, but I think more and more the U.S. is turning into a banana republic with rich and poor, and the middle is disappearing, unfortunately. So I hope that trend reverses. But, you know, any other just takeaways and, you know, tell people, you know, any reading recommendations, your books, of course, website, whatever you want.
Well, we have a couple of websites. One is theinternationalman.com. It's a free website, lots of good articles on it. KCResearch.com, lots of different good articles on that, also free. But any author of books wants people to buy their books. And I think my books are extremely well done. So go on to Amazon and look up Doug Casey, Speculator, which is last year's novel, and the second in the series this year is Drug Lord, the second. And hold on to your hat, because Assassin is coming next year, and we'll see how our hero, Charles Knight, engages in that besmirched occupation.
Of being an assassin. I can't wait to hear more. That's fantastic. Well, Doug Casey, thanks for joining us again. It's always great to talk to you and have you on the show. And it's really fun to have had lunch with you and spent a couple hours with you here in Aspen, Colorado.
Let's do this more often.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.